But usually what I like to do in the evening is read out some sutta which is relevant to where we've just been. And there's another sutta which happened at the bamboo grove where we went this afternoon, which is a very beautiful sutta from the Majjhima Nikaya. It's called the Gopika Moggallana Sutta. So I'm going to read this out now. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Venerable Ananda was living at Ratikaha in the bamboo grove in the squirrel sanctuary, not long after the Blessed One had attained the final Nibbana. So first of all, it places the sutta here in Ratikaha in the bamboo grove where we went this afternoon. And some people did see some squirrels over there. They're obviously descendants of the squirrels who lived in the time of the Buddha. And this was after the Parinibbana, when Ananda, as I was saying, was quite well known and quite famous, and so had no real chance to meditate himself, because he was receiving the guests as one of the important leading figures of Buddhism once the Buddha passed away. Now on that occasion, King Ajatasattu of Magadha, being suspicious of King Pajota, another neighbouring king, was having Ratikaha fortified. Then when it was morning, the Venerable Ananda, dressed and taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Ratikaha for alms. Then the Venerable Ananda thought, it is still too early to wander for alms in Ratikaha. Suppose I went to the Brahmin, Gopika Moggallana, at his workplace. So the Venerable Ananda went to the Brahmin Gopika Moggallana at his workplace. The Brahmin Gopika Moggallana saw the Venerable Ananda coming in the distance and said to him, let Master Ananda come. Welcome to Master Ananda. It is a long time since Master Ananda found an opportunity to come here. Let Master Ananda be seated. This seat is ready. The Venerable Ananda sat down on the seat made ready. The Brahmin Gopika Moggallana took a low seat, sat down at one side, and asked the Venerable Ananda, Master Ananda, is there any single monk who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by Master Gotama, accomplished and fully enlightened? Ananda answers, there is no single bhikkhu, Brahmin, who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. For the Blessed One was the arouser of the unarisen path, the producer of the unproduced path, the declarer of the undeclared path. He was a knower of the path, the finder of the path, the one skilled in the path, but his disciples now abide following that path and become possessed of it afterwards. We mention this at the very end where it's repeated. But this discussion between the Venerable Ananda and the Brahmin Gopika Moggallana was interrupted, for then the Brahmin Vasakara, the minister of Magadha, and he was the one who was responsible for the buildings, while supervising the work at Ratikaha, went to the Venerable Ananda at the workplace of the Brahmin Gopika Moggallana. He exchanged greetings with the Venerable Ananda, and when his courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and asked the Venerable Ananda, for what discussion are you sitting together here now, Master Ananda, and what was your discussion that was interrupted? This is just polite speech, which is repeated often in the suttas. Brahmin. The Brahmin Gopika Moggallana asked me, Master Ananda, is there any single monk who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by Master Gotama, accomplished and fully enlightened. I reply to the Brahmin Gopika Moggallana, there is no single monk Brahmin who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. For the Blessed One was the arouser of the arisen path, but his disciples now abide following that path and become possessed of it afterwards. This was our discussion that was interrupted when you arrived. Wasakara continues, is there, Master Ananda, any single monk who was appointed by Master Gotama thus? He will be your refuge when I am gone, and whom you now have recourse to? There is no single monk, Brahmin, who was appointed by the Blessed One, who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, thus. He will be your refuge when I am gone, and whom we now have recourse to. But is there, Master Ananda, any single monk who has been chosen by the Sangha and appointed by a number of elder monks thus? This one will be our refuge after the Blessed One has gone, and whom you now have recourse to. There is no single monk, Brahmin, who has been chosen thus by the Sangha. But if you have no refuge, Master Ananda, no leader, what is the cause for your concord, for the harmony in the Sangha? We are not without a refuge, Brahmin. We have a refuge. We have the Dhamma as our refuge. This is interesting. When the Buddha passed away, before he passed away, he said he will not appoint a successor. You just have the Dhamma and the Vinaya, the teachings and the rules, to be the successor. So it was the Dhamma, especially here, which was the refuge after the Buddha went away. But when you were asked, is there, Master Gotama, any single monk who was appointed by Master Gotama thus? This he will be your refuge when I am gone, and what you have now, and whom you now have recourse to. You answered, there is no such monk. When you are asked, is there, Master Ananda, any single monk who has been chosen by the Sangha? You answered, there is no such monk. And when you are asked, but if you have no refuge, what is the cause for your concord? You answered, we are not without refuge. We have a refuge as a Dhamma. Now how should the meaning of these statements be regarded, Master Ananda? Brahmin, the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, has prescribed a course of training for the monks, and he has laid down the Patimokkha, which is the monastic rules. On the Upasita day, as many of us as live in dependence upon a single village or district meet together in unison, and when we meet, we ask the one who knows the Patimokkha rules to recite it. If a monk remembers an offence or a transgression while the Patimokkha is being recited, we'll be with him according to the Dhamma in the way we have been instructed. It is not the worthy ones who deal with us. It is the Dhamma that deals with us, the rules of all. Is there, Master Ananda, any single monk whom you now honour, respect, revere and venerate, and on whom you live in dependence, honouring and respecting? There is a single monk, Brahmin, whom we now honour, respect, revere and venerate, and on whom we live in dependence, honouring and respecting him. But when you were asked, is there, Master Ananda, any single monk who was appointed by the Master Gotama? You answer, there is no such monk. When you ask, is there any monk who has been chosen by the Sangha? You answer, there is no monk. When you ask, is there, Ananda, any single monk whom you honour, respect, revere and venerate, and on whom you live in dependence, honouring and respecting him? You answer, there is such a monk whom we now honour, and on whom we live in dependence, honouring and respecting. Now how should the meaning of these statements be regarded, Master Ananda? There are, Brahmin, 10 qualities inspiring confidence that have been declared by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. When these 10 qualities are found in anyone among us, we honour, respect, revere and venerate them, and live in dependence on them, honouring and respecting them. What are these 10? 1. Here, Brahmin, a monk is virtuous. He dwells restrained with the restraint of the monastic rules. He is perfect in conduct and also the places he goes. And seeing fear in the slightest faults, he trains himself by undertaking the monastic training precepts. 2. He has learned much, remembers what he has learned, and consolidates what he has learned. Such teachings as are beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, and beautiful in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing, and which affirm a holy life that is utterly perfect and pure, such teachings as these he has learned much of, remembered, mastered, investigated with his mind, and penetrated well by view. 3. He is one content with his robes, alms food, resting place, and medicinal requisites. 4. He is one who obtains at will, without trouble or difficulty, the 4 jhanas that constitute the higher mind and provide a pleasant abiding here and now. 5. He wields the various kinds of supernormal power, such as, having been one, he becomes many, having become many, he becomes one. Appearing and vanishing, he goes unhindered through a wall, through an enclosure, through a mountain, and so through space. He dives in and out of the earth as though it were water. He walks on water without sinking, as though it were earth. Sitting cross-legged, he travels in space like a bird. With his hand he touches and strokes the moon and the sun. And he wields power even as far as the Brahma world. 6. With a divine ear element which is purified and surpasses the human, he hears both kinds of sounds, the divine and the human, those that are far as well as near. 7. He understands the minds of other beings, of other persons, having encompassed them with his own mind. He understands their minds. 8. He recollects his manifold past lives. 9. With the divine eye which is purified and surpasses the human, he sees beings passing away and reappearing according to their karma. And 10. Lastly, by realizing for himself with direct knowledge, he here and now enters upon and abides in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are without the outflowings, with the destruction of the outflowings. These, Brahmin, are the 10 qualities inspiring confidence that have been declared by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened. When these qualities are found in any among us, we honour, respect, revere and venerate them, and live in dependence on them, honouring and respecting them. When, as was said, the Venerable Vasukara, the minister of Magadha, said to General Upananda, who was with him, "What do you think, General? When these worthy ones honour one who should be honoured, respect one who should be respected, revere one who should be revered, and venerate one who should be venerated, surely they honour the one who should be honoured, and venerate the one who should be venerated. For if these worthy ones did not honour, respect, revere, and venerate such a person, then whom could they honour, respect, revere, and venerate? And on whom should they live in dependence?" Then the Brahmin Vasukara, the minister of Magadha, said to the Venerable Ananda, "Where is Master Ananda living now?" "Now I am living in the bamboo grove, Brahmin." "I hope, Master Ananda, the bamboo grove is pleasant, quiet, undisturbed by voices, with an atmosphere of seclusion, remote from people, favourable for retreat." "Indeed, Brahmin, that bamboo grove is pleasant, quiet and undisturbed by voices, with an atmosphere of seclusion, remote from people, favourable for retreat." Because of such guardian protectors as yourselves, in other words, the ministers and the general protected that place for the Sangha. "Indeed," said Vasukara, the minister of Magadha, "indeed, Master Ananda, that bamboo grove is pleasant, It is quiet and undisturbed by voices, with an atmosphere of seclusion, remote from people, favourable for retreat. And it is because of the worthy ones who are meditators and cultivate meditation. The worthy ones are meditators and cultivate meditation. On one occasion, Master Ananda, Master Gotama was living at Vaisali in a hall with a peaked roof in the great wood, where we're going to in 2 days' time. Then I went there and approached Master Gotama, and in many ways he gave a talk about meditation. Master Gotama was a meditator and cultivated meditation, and he praised every type of meditation. Ananda interjects, "The Blessed One, Brahmin, did not praise every type of meditation, nor did he condemn every type of meditation. What kind of meditation did the Blessed One not praise? Here, Brahmin, someone abides with his mind obsessed by sensual lust, a prey to sensual lust, and he does not understand as it actually is the escape from the arisen lust. While he harbors lust within, he meditates, premeditates, outmeditates, and mismeditates. He abides with his mind obsessed by ill will, a prey to ill will, and without understanding the escape from these things. Or he abides with his mind obsessed by sloth and torpor, or his mind obsessed by restlessness and remorse, or his mind obsessed by doubts. As you would know, these are the five hindrances. And he does not understand, as it actually is, the escape from these hindrances. While he harbors these hindrances within, he meditates, premeditates, outmeditates, and mismeditates. The Blessed One did not praise that kind of meditation." In brief, the meditation with the hindrances. "And what kind of meditation did the Blessed One praise?" said Vasukara. "Here, Brahmin, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters upon and abides in the first jhana. Then he abides in the second jhana, then the third jhana, then the fourth jhana. The Blessed One praised that kind of meditation, jhanas." It seems, Master Ananda, that Master Gotama censured that kind of meditation that should be censured, and praised that kind of meditation that should be praised. "And now, Master Ananda, we depart. We are busy. We have much to do. Now is the time, Brahmin, to do as you think fit." Then the Brahmin Vasukara, the minister of Magadha, having delighted and rejoiced in the Venerable Ananda's words, rose from his seat and departed. Then soon after he had left, the Brahmin Gopika Moggallana said to the Venerable Ananda, "Master Ananda has not yet answered what we asked him." Which was actually, let's get that question back again. What did he ask him? He asked him, "Is there any monk?" He asked him, "Is there any single monk who possesses in each and every way all those qualities were possessed by Master Gotama, accomplished and fully enlightened?" "Did we not tell you, Brahmin, there is no single monk who possesses in each and every way all those qualities were possessed by the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened? For the Blessed One was the arouser of the unarisen path, the producer of the unproduced path, the declarer of the undeclared path. He was the knower of the path, the finder of the path, the one skilled in the path. But his disciples now abide following that path and become possessed of it afterwards." And there finishes this sutta. And there's a quick commentary on this. That last question was answering something which somebody asked me today, a common question. What is the difference between the Buddha and other monks who are also fully attained, enlightened? Here is the difference. The only difference is that the Buddha was the arouser of the unarisen path, the producer of the produced path, the declarer of the undeclared path, the knower, the finder of the path. His disciples now abide following that path and become possessed of it afterwards. So as I said in brief to someone today, the difference between the Buddha and the Arahats is the Buddha was the first of those arahats, of this dispensation. The other ones, he found the path and walked that path. So the other ones had that path pointed out to them, but they also walked the path. The only difference as the Buddha walked that path first, the finder, the declarer. That's the only difference between the Buddha and the Arahats. The other part of this sutta was that question was interrupted by Wasakara, who asked, now the Buddha had passed away, is there any other person to lead the Sangha? And the Buddha, Ananda rightly said, no, just the Dhamma is going to be the refuge for the monks. And the Dhamma obviously included here the Vinaya, because in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta the Buddha said, let the Dhamma and the Vinaya be your teacher once I'm gone. And he gave an example on how that works. You do not need a leader to lay down the law, because the law is already laid down. So we just apply that law as laid down by the Buddha. And he said, but is there anyone you revere and honour? He said, there is someone you revere and honour, someone with those 10 qualities which the Buddha had himself. So if anyone has the qualities, again, I'll just be in brief, who's virtuous, learned, content with little, has the jhanas, and has the what's called the 6 abhinyas, the psychic powers, also the attainment of enlightenment. So someone who has those things, who is virtuous, content with little, learned with the jhanas, and has these results of this training, those are the ones we respect and honour. And lastly, the really interesting part here, that when they talked about where does Master Gotama live, he said in a bamboo grove, and they were praising it as conducive for meditation. And said peaceful, far from crowds, far from voices, suitable for a retreat. Today it was a little bit noisy because you could hear the music from the market outside, that obviously market would not be there before. But the reason why it was conducive was for two reasons. Master Ananda said it was because of you, because of the ministers and the soldiers keeping it quiet. In other words, the monasteries did need the government to protect its silence. And the ministers and the general replied, well, actually, it's you monks, because you meditate, that's why it's quiet. And obviously, both were right. To have a quiet monastery, you do need the assistance of the government. You also need monks who keep it quiet too, by meditating there. And that way, you do have the place suitable for retreat. You need both. And lastly, Venerable Wasakara, in his rambling discourse, said that he went to see the Buddha in another temple in Vaisali, and that too was suitable for meditation. And he heard there the Buddha praising meditation and being a meditator himself, which is important, that the teachers are also the meditators. So we don't actually just teach meditation, we do meditation, teaching by example. And then he was saying, does the Buddha, he actually made a mistake. Wasakara said the Buddha praises all meditation. He said, no, when there's the 5 hindrances there, when there's desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, or doubt, that's not a meditation which he praises. The only one he does praise is the 4 jhanas. That's a fascinating saying there, which I repeat very often, because you know I always praise the jhanas myself. I make a much of those jhanas. And here you have the Buddha actually saying in the sutta, which was told at the bamboo grove, just a hop, skip and a jump from here, that those are the meditations which he praises, the only ones he praises, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th jhanas. And at the very end, the Brahmin thinks he hasn't had his question answered. He said, is there another bhikkhu who is the same as the Buddha? And he said, no, the only difference is between the arahats, people like Sariputta Moggallana, who went to Sariputta's place where he became enlightened today, and also where he passed away today. So we encompass Sariputta's 2 holy places today. We've gone to the place where the Buddha became enlightened, in a couple of days we go to the place the Buddha passed away. Today we've gone to the 2 places where Sariputta became enlightened and where Sariputta passed away. It's also where Sariputta was born as well. So we've gone actually to 3 of Sariputta's holy places. And so the only difference between those was the Buddha was the first of the Arahants, the one who found the path. The other ones followed behind him, but walking the same path, reaching the same goal. So
that's the sutta there.
And I read it out because it's full of very interesting stuff, but also because it happened in the bamboo grove where we've just visited today. Any questions or comments about that sutta?
When you mentioned the four jhanas, the Brahmin, do you understand what you're
when he was saying about the four jhanas, would the Brahmin really understand what was being said? He was actually repeating, or rather Master Ananda was repeating what the Buddha had said. So those are the types of meditation which the Buddha praises, just the jhanas. So the Brahmin would probably not understand by experience what those things are. He would have heard them said before. And he would have some familiarity, I would imagine, with the things called the hindrances. So he would have known the meaning, at least in theory, if not have some intuition about what those are in practice. Is that the sort of question you're asking? Yeah.
I don't know if I heard Ajahn. It was just talking about the 80,000, and it said being able to manifest into many beings. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. Apparently, that although I don't watch these movies, but in The Matrix there was one of the people there who manifested into many beings. And I think the people who made that movie were supposed to be Buddhists. I think, is that correct?
They would have had an understanding of it. They had a lot of doubt, so.
Yeah, but I think they were Buddhist, the producers or whatever. Is that true? I read it in an article. And anyway, I think that's where they got the idea of people manifesting as many, many beings and then de-manifesting.
Was only the Buddha able to do that, or was other people with the powers, like other arahants, able to do that as well?
Other arahants were able to do that as well. Isn't that the case in that story in the Vinaya about there was one monk who was manifesting into many people, and he was supposed to be invited to a dana that day, and I think Wisaka was supposed to invite him to a dana. Chulapantaka, that's right. And she sent her servant, and the servant said, "Don't know which one to ask. There's hundreds of those Chulapantakas. They all look the same." And I think the Buddha said, "Just go up to the one and you ask him, and he'd be the real one." And she did that, and all the other ones sort of collapsed, as it were, into that one. So yeah, that has happened, and other monks have done that.
It's also a phenomenon in the Hindu tradition for the yogis. Those yogis have those benefits as well,
and okay, that's a Hindu tradition of manifesting.
Yeah, it's for Yogeshwara.
For more than one place. Be a very useful thing to do, so you can give a talk in many places at the same time, in London as well as in Perth as well as Sri Lanka, but then you'd be sort of three or four times as tired as just sitting one time. Yes. Yeah, go on.
Today
thank you. Okay, it's a very good question. You don't have to believe, obviously. That was actually said this afternoon for entertainment. At the end of a long day, you do not give like very deep discourses, especially on the road, because people will fall asleep and they won't get in. It's a very funny story, because the idea of a monk going three times around a lap of honour around the city, which is exactly what they say in the suttas, or in the Vinaya rather, where it originates from, is like an amusing anecdote. And of course the main thing is that we should not show psychic powers for material gain. You shouldn't do anything for material gain if you're a monk. Even give a talk. You shouldn't give a talk for material gain, you should give a talk. Just no matter if you get something or nothing out of it. And that's the most important part of that anecdote. But it's nice to actually have these stories of psychic powers and stuff like that. It gives a bit of oomph and pizzazz about sort of Buddhism, and people like those stories. And of course, when I was a young monk and just a young Buddhist and especially a scientist, I thought, no way does that happen. But I've changed my mind over these years. But you have to change your own mind. I can't change it for you. But actually to see things happening which just boggle you. You know, which shouldn't happen, but they do happen. There are such things as psychic powers, and sometimes you see those things and wow, they are real. And that's really quite astounding. So these days I believe all that stuff. But again, I don't ask you to. And it's not necessary to. It's a great story. Yes, Heidi. I can actually understand that question because of the resonance in the room.
Are there actually physical marks of the Buddha?
Are there physical marks of the Buddha anywhere? That's an interesting question. Oh, the 32 marks on the Buddha, yeah. Yeah, that's a fascinating thing, because that's in the suttas, but it doesn't make any sense to us. So it's a contradiction there. And many monks think that that must have actually been added after the first council at the Satapani cave. It makes no sense at all that the Buddha was a person who would look just the same as any other being. And that was actually the thing which was most believable in the suttas. There's in one occasion that there was a monk who was actually was an ex-king, if I think I remember correctly, who was actually walking, visiting. He'd heard about the Buddha and got faith in one of the Buddha's disciples and became a monk. He decided to go and visit the Buddha, and the Buddha knew that he was coming and went to greet him, and they met together in this potter's house, I think it was a potter's house, a smith's house. I think this monk arrived first and the Buddha arrived afterwards. So the Buddha asked, if it's not inconveniencing you, can I also stay in here? And so this monk said, sure monk, you can stay in here, not knowing it was a Buddha he was actually speaking to. And then this monk started meditating in the evening, and the Buddha meditated. And every now and again they'd open their eyes and be inspired by each other. This monk saw this Buddha. He didn't know who he was, just the monk saying, wow, he's sitting really well, I'll sit very well. And the Buddha saw this monk, oh, he's a good monk, I'll carry on sitting meditation as well. And in the morning they meditated all night together, and they were praising each other, and they started talking at the end of the morning. And the Buddha asked, who's your teacher, and who are you? He gave his name and said, I'm a disciple of, I think it's Mahakachana or something, and I'm going to see the great Master Gotama and the Buddha. They're staying in the Sawati. And then he said, who's your teacher, monk? And we said, I have no teacher, I'm the Buddha. Ah! He said, I've called you these bad, they're not bad names, I've shown no respect to you at all. I've been treating you just like another monk, please forgive me. Of course the Buddha forgave him and has actually praised him because of the way his lifestyle. But the point was that he couldn't recognise the Buddha at all. And if he had all these marks like wheels on his hands or on his feet and long earlobes and all these other things, of course you'd have been able to pick him out straight away. So we think that much of that is what was added after the time of the Buddha. But nevertheless, it's actually had an effect upon Buddhism, because those marks which are called the 32 marks of a great man, you see them on the Buddha statues. You always see like a Buddha statue with a little bump on the top of his head. The little hairs are supposed to be like little snails curled up in a, was it clockwise direction or anti-clockwise? Clockwise direction. So you always see the Buddha with hair on. You never see him like really bald. You see a little bump on the top of his head, see the ears elongated. So these are little signs which you actually can notice the Buddha statue because of those marks. We saw at the top of Satipani Cave just the statue of the Jain. You can actually tell because there's no bump on the head and because it's naked, and that's Mahavira, that's the Jain. Later on you can actually see some carvings of Avalokiteshvara, you know, Kuan Yin. You can tell that's a Kuan Yin because it's got hair, sometimes very long hair, bangles and beads. And it's also that Kuan Yin has always got a little Buddha in the headdress. If you see a statue of Maitreya in sort of the headdress, it's got a little stupa in the headdress. That was actually the way that the artist would be able to make a statue and people would be able to know which one it really was really representing. Whether it's Maitreya, a future Buddha, or Siddhartha Gautama, or Mahavira, or if it's like this, the famous monk like Sariputta or Moggallana, it would be, you know, looking like a monk with the robe over one shoulder, but with a bald head. And that would be the sign of a monk, not the Buddha. There'd be no bump on top of the head. So those marks actually were responsible for the way we look at the Buddha statue these days. Yes, right, yes, yeah. For more accuracy. The one of the ones we changed, which twice I've forgotten today, I got it right the first day, but this morning I changed it. Not unburdened with duties. It really should be not busy with duties or with no few duties. Apakicca. That's what it should really be. But you know, monks like me will get embarrassed by saying that, so because I've got lots of duties. And actually in that sense you're going against what the Buddha asked you to do, have few duties. Not to be busy. So we change it to busy with duties. Because unburdened with duties, it tends to say, well, you can have lots of duties as long as it's not a burden for you. But duties are by the nature of burden. He wanted people to have a lot of free time, not to have too many duties. We're also afraid that if we keep saying that, we won't get anybody to volunteer for our committee in Perth. So that's one of the other reasons we're a bit concerned whether we should keep on saying this. And the other one is like about views. I think first of all it was not holding too fixed views. Which was actually, it sounds very nice, but there's such a thing in Buddhism called right view. And that's pretty fixed. You know, like the right view about the law of karma, about rebirth, about Four Noble Truths. Pretty fixed view. And so actually the fixed view was also wishful thinking. It sounded nice, but it really wasn't what the Buddha really meant in that sutta. So now I think we call it not false views. False views, yeah. Like wrong views, silly views. So that's why we've changed it, to make it more accurate. Sometimes you can see, I can see this tendency, always to actually to say or translate what is popular, what people would like to hear, rather than actually what's true. There's always that tendency there in life. So it's much better to actually to be courageous, and if people like it or don't like it, just say what the Buddha said. Does that answer the question?
That second point, or the first point on unburdened, not busy with duties?
Yeah, that's instead of having few duties, it didn't really actually scan, it didn't go with the meter of the chant,
yeah.
So we decided not, what was I saying?
Not busy
with duties, like having few duties, didn't really go, not busy with duties. Okay, that's how it went anyway. That's the reason why I decided.
My question is just, did the Buddha give any guidelines about getting that balance right? Because that's really, you must struggle with that being your position as an abbot, and any person as a householder has always got that on his cards. You know, to get the, you know, does that busyness become really detrimental, or is it absolutely proportional?
Well, again, really one can tell this by one's progress on the path, the Eightfold Path. If you're doing so many duties, it's really hindering your progress. You're not getting deep meditation, not getting insights. It's hindering you. Then it's not a wise thing to do.
Is there something that comes by increments? In other words, say for example, you notice that your meditation is very racy for continuous periods of time, weeks or months or something like that, then would that be then a sign you are busy with duty and it's unreasonable to think that you're going to get any depth, as opposed to everybody goes through periods of meditation where you have a bit of raciness or not a good day, a rough day in meditation?
I think that's, I see what you're saying there. You have to take the progress in meditation over a longer period rather than just a few little, you know, one or two days where you may be off. So that is actually true. This is where you have to pace oneself to see what you're capable of doing. But one thing which does need to be said is that I mention this often in talks to the monks. The Buddha said that even monks should make punya, should make good, make merit, make good karma. Because I found, certainly from my own experience, that if you do serve and do duties to others, then that good karma is conducive to your proficiency in meditation. Basically, if you have a pure mind, a selfless mind, a mind of giving and serving and helping others, then that powerful mind, that pure mind, will actually assist your meditation. Because of your pure mind, it's very easy to come into the present moment because you're happy in this moment. You've got a powerful, pure mind. That's what you actually come in towards when you go into the present moment or silence. People are not happy with themselves because they haven't got a pure mind, because they haven't done much good karma. They're always very restless. So the more selfless, pure-hearted, the more you keep your precepts, the more generous, kind, compassionate you are, the easier it is to be in the present moment and silent. The easier it is to watch your breath. Something I can see for myself how that works. So by doing duties, good duties for others, making merit, you find it's easier to meditate. So by coming on this trip, this journey, which is meritorious because you're visiting the holy places, you find you may get physically tired, but your mind will have more pure energy. You'll find your meditation should increase as a result of this trip. But it will not increase if we stay up too late. So I think that's enough questions for this evening, because tomorrow morning we have a 5 o'clock wake-up call, and 6 o'clock breakfast, and at 7 o'clock we'll be off on the journey to Patna. Now, I'm not quite sure, is Palini here, book here? He's taking the rest. I think probably, because this is what always happens, is that before we have breakfast, to have your bags packed and outside your room. So
my breakfast, sir. Yeah.
Before breakfast, yeah. Okay, so have your bags packed before breakfast, outside your room, and then they'll be taken by the staff here to go into the buses, be counted, make sure everything is there. Remember, if you have an extra bag to check in or one less, please let Palini know. Otherwise, you won't know the exact number of bags going into this bus, the bags going into the other buses. And so, the bags outside the room, the ones which is going in the bus underneath, and breakfast at 6, and we leave for Patna at 7. I guess we'll say goodbye by Arahant Sammasambuddho to the Buddha. Jaja Bhutanti Lang.
Arahant Sammasambuddho Bhagava Bhutan Bhagavatam Abhivadeh. Suvākāto bhagavata japo dhammaṃ namassāmi. Sutupatipano Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghanamabhu.